On today's Longview, our political analyst Neil Milner came across an unusual story of two churches whose congregations are either all black or all white. So there's a book on this, huh?
Well, it's a long essay. It's not a book yet, although she should write. This is an essay in the New York Review, which usually doesn't publish this kind of stuff, but they saw something in it, and they're right. It's in the November issue of New York Review. It's written by Bata Ungar Sargon, who's the opinion editor of The Forward, which is a national and historic Jewish newspaper, which adds some spice. Short form, there was a merger between a historically black church, which was fairly small, and an evangelical church, and an evangelical church that was quite large, a kind of mega church in North Carolina that was virtually all white. And this is the heart of Trump country. So part of this story is about how do you have that kind of reconciliation, that kind of merging in an area in which there is so much racial polarization. And that's what part of the story is about. And remember, it's a story. It's about one place, and that's important because it shows a lot of interesting stuff, but you wonder if you can generalize. So these churches merged. There was resistance at first from the black church. The black minister had encouraged it because he had been totally mesmerized and inspired by the white pastor at this larger church and said, let's merge. They had established a relationship. The two pastors got along very well. Both of these churches are evangelical, which means that they share a lot of their worldview and their outer worldview, actually, although not totally. And so that helped to bring this together. But what the story is about is the deeper sense of why this happens and what brings this thing about and why it's so important to understand.
I mean, it's just a fascinating story that, you know, you get these two guys together and they say, you know, let's try it.
Let's try it. And it has, in fact, worked pretty well. The churches are physical. Well, the white church is much bigger. They've got about 15 pastors. The black church is in a town not far away. They've stayed separate, but there's a lot of stuff they do together, and there's a lot of worship together. And remember what Martin Luther King said back in the 60s, that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning is the most segregated time in America because whites worship with whites, black worship with blacks. So there's all kinds of compelling reasons, but the important thing to understand is that's still true. Only about 10% of people who go to Protestant churches in fact go to churches that are pretty mixed, black and white. So the writer looks at, by talking to lots of people, what in fact allows this to happen. How can you take a place in the South with so much history of racism and Trump supporters who are so often associated with racist and see what kind of unity is there? And it's a very interesting story because it's a story about how the pastors see their mission, which in some ways ignores politics purposely and in other ways refines themselves in a broader way. So they say, listen, our mission is to fight evil and it's to fight Satan. And we see part of that as bringing about unity. Politics, they don't talk in secular terms. It's about bringing about unity. That means unity between black people and white people. And that's what we're trying to do in this congregation. We know that some of these white people are Trump supporters. We know that some of them are racist. But the idea of trying to bring about fellowship and unity is more important than anything else. So the first thing that they identify here is in some ways counter to how secular people think about this. They think about the inherent racism. They think about the fact that if you're a Trump supporter and you have racist ideas, that makes it makes you implacable, and it makes the other side implacable to work together. So they have a way of dealing with it. The other thing they do is they keep politics out of the parishes, out of the churches. Now remember, the pastors that we tend to hear about, the social conservatives, primarily Protestants, but it's even true of Catholics, are ones that are much more politically active. They speak about politics, whether they do in their churches or not, I don't know. They speak about politics naturally or nationally. Billy Graham's son is a good example. These folks try to damper down that kind of thing, and it's because they see themselves having a bigger mission and a different mission. The mission is to fight racism, but the broader mission is to fight evil, to fight Satan, and you do this in a way and in a language and in a format and with a theology that's different from what most of us seculars and, in my case, liberals think about.
So they basically were looking at the similarities and not so much the differences, but
well,
there are differences.
That's right. Although they would probably say, listen, that, you know, we're all sinners. We're all in the eyes of God. There's a certain kind of redemption that we can get there. We know that there are important differences out there, but one of the ways you deal with these differences is essentially in this kind of religious manner, and you manifest it in what you do and what you parishes. You bring people together. You talk in a language that's not polarizing so much. Now, in the abstract, for lots of people, this sounds kind of goody-goody or unrealistic. And we'll talk in a minute about what it says as a generalization. But the important thing, I think, to understand here is that there is a different language that is framing people's lives, at least in the church. And also, as she found out, that a lot of the people who voted for Trump are very cognizant of the limitations of Trump, but make a decision to vote for him because some of their values, particularly abortion, being against abortion, are important. So you get a more nuanced view of it. So that's in a sense, and the thing has been around for a couple years now. The merger seems to be working. The congregations do stuff together. The ministry is still there. And that's where the story takes place. And then there's that little coda in there that's very powerful where she goes to church, and she's not Christian, and they invite her up. She comes up to they introduce her, comes up to the pulpit, and before she knows it, she's surrounded by a bunch of pastors, and they're praying for her, and she's totally moved. She said she begins to cry, and that makes her think then about the idea of grace, about grace and forgiveness is something that's important. But that there's another broader context, a historical context out here that you have to understand.
So then what can we learn from this model? What's the takeaway?
Well, the first thing you have to learn is that it's a story. It's only a story, so it may be exceptional. The other thing, but you learn a lot. You learn a lot of nuance. The other thing is to remember how historically ingrained white supremacy and polarization is, and how much of other people that have written about this emphasize that side. So I don't think you can reconcile the two. They're different patterns. In small ways, this is a situation that there is, but you never want to forget the power of history that has so much affected the relationships in the South and the politics that have built on it, like the emergence of the Republican Party as a party that attracted Southerners.
Yeah, this is just fascinating, though. Just really
fascinating. I really liked it. Yeah.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
We have been talking with Neil Milner, retired professor of political science and contributing editor of our segment, The Long View.